following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
You're listening to the Feed Podcast.
So is breakfast really the most important meal of the day, or is that just a marketing tagline from the, I don't know, Association of Cereal Producers? I'm not sure that's even a real association. Ina, my guest today, I'm going to be introducing you in a minute, but what do you think? Is it really the most important meal of the day?
Without doubt.
Really?
Without doubt. It helps your mental, helps your physical, helps your emotional.
I was going to say, if it was so important, we'd probably dedicate more time to it rather than just stuffing our faces with bagels and schmears and breakfast bars and lattes.
True.
That seems kind of like a cop-out in a way.
It is a big cop-out, but there's a new thing now called a pre-breakfast, and that's for people who are getting up early to work out. So they have a smoothie, or they have a yogurt cup, or they have an overnight oatmeal. And so at least they're eating something, because you can't run your car without fuel.
So it's like a breakfast amuse.
That's a nice way to put it. Pre-breakfast.
All right. Coming up on today's show, a very special guest sits in for Rick as we talk breakfast. Not just menu suggestions, but how to succeed in a crowded field and where to go to find some of the best breakfasts in the world. This is the Feed Podcast. I'm Steve Dolinsky, a food and travel reporter at ABC 7 News in Chicago and author of Pizza City USA.
And I'm Ina Pinkney, the breakfast columnist at the Chicago Tribune and the former chef, baker, owner of Ina's in Chicago.
And every week, the Feed takes a deep dive into the world of professional chefs, restaurateurs, food artisans, and drink experts, sharing their stories and uncovering their passion for food and drink. Rick is on the road this week. He's been doing a ton of traveling lately, if you follow him on Instagram or Twitter. Oaxaca, it was around Christmas time, and then Vietnam and Manila, plus glorious Oklahoma City. And we didn't want to skip a show or just throw up a rerun. So we reached out to one of our dear friends, Ina Pinkney, who knows a thing or two about a thing or two. Welcome to week one of your two-week gig.
Who knew that I'd wind up on a James Beard-inspired day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We only the finest here.
Only the finest.
People don't know who you are, maybe outside of Chicago. Everybody in Chicago knows who you are. You had a very famous place called Ina's for many years. But I want to tell folks about who you are. I know you're from Brooklyn, right?
Yes, can you tell? Wait. I am. I'm from Brooklyn, and I came to Chicago in 1977, and this now is my real home. And I didn't bake my first cake until I was 37, and then I opened up a breakfast restaurant when I was 48, and I closed it 5 years ago.
And do you have, and that was a very sad day, I remember that, it's now a pizza place, it's now a Lou Malnati's, right?
It is, because pizza is pizza.
I know. Did you have a pizza thing in Brooklyn growing up? Was that, you have a pizza place?
No, we didn't. We kept kosher, and so the only time we ever ate out was Chinese food on Sundays, but we were not a pizza people.
And food must have played a big role, though, growing up in that part of the world.
It did, because my mother hated to cook. And my grandmother was a terrible cook. And the only one was Aunt Susie, who was a really fabulous cook. And that was the first time I ever had meat and cheese in a same dish, lasagna, and thought, oh my God, I didn't die. There's more to the world than this.
Exactly the same story for me, except Midwestern, not East Coast, obviously.
It's all the same.
So what brought you here in 77?
Ah, the love of a man. And now he lives in Puerto Rico.
I'll follow the man.
But I stayed with you.
I'm so touched. Okay, so you said 37 you got into baking?
I baked my first cake at 37. I had 21 jobs in my life, and I was fired from 19 of them. And I thought, I better find a place for myself, because I couldn't fit the corporate culture. You know, we Brooklyn girls are different. We speak our mind. And so I baked this cake, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. You buy ingredients, you make a cake, you sell the cake, you get the money, you buy more ingredients, and you make another cake, and you sell it. I got this. And all of a sudden, I had this surprise birthday cake delivery service, and then people just wanted the cake. And I went, okay, what else do you want? And I taught myself to bake, and I had a storefront, not a retail, just a storefront kitchen. And I did that for 11 years, and every day I had breakfast out, and breakfast was horrible in the 80s. The coffee was insipid, everything was really bad, and I finally just said, why can't anybody make a decent breakfast? And I thought, you know what, every day I play with butter, flour, sugar, and eggs. What is breakfast? butter, flour, sugar, and eggs.
And really, in Chicago, I can't speak for other cities, but in Chicago, I'm guessing the experience in the 80s was probably the Greek diner, the Greek immigrants who put everything on the menu, 15 kinds of omelets.
All with feta and tomato.
All with feta and tomato, yep. And there's a famous place here, Lou Mitchell's, I think, is the place that's been around a long time. But that was about it. There wasn't a lot of, there was no boutique breakfast.
I went to Lou Mitchell's every single Saturday morning, and when I was getting ready to open my restaurant, he was very upset. And I took him in my car to my restaurant and said, Lou, I just want you to see this is not the same. And he finally gave me his blessing.
Oh, that was nice of you to take him, though.
Wow, well, I thought so. I owed him that. You know, he worked hard all those years.
Well, he was down in the Loop, probably. You were up in Lincoln Park?
I was on Webster and Bissell.
I remember that place.
I do.
You had the little bakery in the back. We remember we did stories for Channel 7 back in the day. This must have been in the 90s.
It was.
Yeah. And you were kind of known for baking amazing brownies, and you could do them either fudgy or cakey.
Right. And I think your kids like the cakey.
They like the cakey brownies.
They like them, me too.
But so this love of sweets then led to some breakfast. So then what was your idea of making a better breakfast?
Well, first I wanted it to be fine dining. I wanted it to be white tablecloth and very quiet. I didn't want loud music. I didn't want loud talking. I had carpeting. I wanted it to be peaceful. I wanted business meetings to happen there so that you could really have a conversation in this tone of voice. I also wanted food that people hadn't seen yet. Yes, it was a time of two eggs over easy and hash browns and whole wheat toast, but I wanted a frittata and I wanted a spicy vegetable hash. And then I love the idea of the cornmeal dish that we did, the scrapple. Mm-hmm. But I hate scrapple. I hate the color of it. I hate the smell of it. But why couldn't I make it into a vegetarian version with cheddar cheese and black beans and corn? So I decided to make everything I wanted, including Marion Cunningham's, you know, Heavenly Hots, the sour cream pancakes that melt in your mouth. And I put together a menu, not being a real cook. I'm not trained. And I just knew what I wanted to eat for breakfast. And I thought if it was good enough for me, it would be good enough for you.
Hmm. And then you moved to the West Loop eventually to a little bit larger space.
Right. It was me and Oprah in the old days and Michael Jordan. That was all that was there at the time. And I knew that was the right place to go because we had free parking. So people would say, you're going to the West Loop? Are you crazy? And I'd say, I have free parking. They go, oh, we'll be there. Plus, remember, I had 11 years of baking for families. And so I already had a built-in clientele. And so when I moved there, they followed. And you remember the salt and pepper shakers? Because we had those on all the table.
Right.
People would bring them to us. Well, here I am moving to the West Loop, and I come to work one day, and there's a big box of salt and pepper shakers on the doorstep waiting for me.
And there must have been something special about seeing people sort of at their best, at their brightest. They're sort of, they're fresh. They're ready for the day ahead. They might have a big meeting or a big presentation, and they're having a big meeting there.
Yes.
And you see them like they're the first person they see after they leave the house.
And that was part of the reason we were as successful as we were is because we understood hospitality in a way other restaurants didn't. When you walked in the door, everybody turned toward you and said, good morning, welcome to Ina's. And when you were finished, everybody said, thank you for coming to Ina's. Have a good day. There was something about the hospitality that we were not finding in other places, and people appreciated that. But remember, we also saw people at their most vulnerable. They would come after a funeral. We had people who signed divorce papers there and told us it was the only place they could do it because they knew the love would be around them. So we saw it all, and we respected it all. And I think that made us who we were.
And so you just got to the point in your life and your career and you just your health and you just couldn't do it anymore? It wasn't sustainable?
I think when you do something as well as you know how, when it's over, it's over. And I knew it was really time. I was already over 70. I had done this a long time. And it was just, I don't know, there was just, you just know it. If you're tuned in, I have always believed in exit strategies. And so that was my exit strategy.
But you have all this knowledge and you took it to the Tribune now. And you've got a monthly column there. So tell me about that.
It's really exciting to go out and to find independently owned places because they need the love during the week. I don't write about brunch. Brunch is not my thing. It's not my beat. I don't like going out to brunch. I don't like the wait. I don't like the people. I don't like the drinks. I don't like anything.
Where did that come from? Like, I'm a little cheap with it when it comes to brunch. I don't want to spend $15 for eggs.
I don't blame you.
And I don't want to wait 45 minutes to sit down and there's a screaming in the chaos. Right. But was that Has that always been around, brunch? I think it's the only
time people thought they could get together with friends and have the first meal of the day, okay, and not dinner. It's cheaper than dinner. But breakfast is the one that I go for. So when I find a small place that needs the love Monday to Friday, that's really my goal, is to tell you where to go that's worth your time and your money. I never write about a place I don't like. That's not my job, and it's not fair. You could get a brand new chef the day after I'm there, and it could be the best place on earth, but by the time my column comes out, I'm going to slam you? I don't think so. So I try to help them. And if I go to a place and I see it's got potential, I will tell the owner. Because I'm not undercover. I'm not doing a critical food review. I'm trying to get them to be better so that people will come.
So you have this experience, this knowledge. As you said, you're very forthright with people and you're very honest with them. I would have thought you could create a consulting business. You said you suffer from a little bit of post-traumatic...
Restaurant disorder,
because you've gone through this. So you really just are there as kind of a reporter looking for breakfast and looking for ways to... You can make suggestions so they can improve.
Exactly. I went to one restaurant and it was really terrible in many ways. And I spoke to the manager and I said, I know you want to succeed. I can see the love and the money that went into this place. So let me tell you three things that you're going to do better. And then I came up with a whole list of things that people could do better to do better. And I wrote about that. And for example, when you're with children in a restaurant, take the children's order first so that their food comes out first. And so mom and dad and people can cut their food and get it ready and the kids start to eat because they have low blood sugar. And then your order comes out and you get to eat it when it's hot. Put the check down immediately when there's children there and say, we're not asking you to leave. We just want you to be ready to go when you're ready to go. Things like that make a really big difference when there's children around. We also want the music to be at a conversational level. I walk into some places early in the morning and the music is so loud and I go, why is that? This is breakfast, for God's sakes. So there's lots of little things that people can pay attention to that they really don't.
So like at a hotel restaurant, you're saying, so at dinner time it might be thumping a little bit, but breakfast time they've got to turn it down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, my goal was to find a way to do a restaurant that was between the diner and the hotel dining room. That was my goal, and so I went right in the middle. So it was the sensibility of a hotel dining room with the quiet and the thoughtfulness, and yet we were serving food that was accessible and moderately priced.
What other tips would you recommend for people starting off if they're going to focus primarily on breakfast or lunch? It's obviously a different clientele. Anything that they could do better that would be just good advice from everything you've gone through?
The one thing I always tell them is to turn up the hospitality. And that's what I just mentioned earlier. That makes such a huge difference when someone doesn't sort of roll their eyes when you say table for three, please, or they tell you how much time it's going to take. There's something missing in all of this now that they're doing you a favor to give you a table. I want to be greeted. You know, this is the only retail situation on the planet where I walk in to give you my money. And I want to have that exchange of kindness in that. I don't come in and say, do you have those pancakes in blue? I'm coming in. So there's a respect and an exchange of energy that we need to have together
Danny Meyer would call that enlightened hospitality, sort of, you know, empathizing with the customer, too, and sort of being on their side as opposed to saying, oh, it's going to be 45 minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Danny Meyer has always been my hero. I mean, I was doing it before I knew there was a Danny Meyer because I was sort of out of the loop in the 90s. But that is exactly what made us different and what makes my experience different when I walk into a restaurant.
What would you do with just a difficult customer? Because I'm imagining everybody listening, you know, has in the business has had a difficult customer or two, and you just can't seem to please them. Any advice for that?
There is. First of all, you'd never stand at the end of the table looking down at them. What you do is you stand next to them so that your hearts are aligned. And the minute I stand next to you and I look at you and I say, I know you've had a difficult time this morning. Is there anything I can do right this minute to make it better for you? Because that's my goal. And I always say, whether it's on a crazy Yelp review or a person, I didn't unlock the door this morning to get it wrong. I want so much to make you happy so that you want to come back. And that happens a lot, and it also works every time.
That is fantastic advice, Ina. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new face of breakfast. We've moved way beyond eggs, toast, and bacon to a world filled with shakshuka, avocado toast, and acai bowls. Mm. Then later, Ina and I share some of our favorite places for breakfast in Chicago and around the world. Stay with us.
Have a beef with something you heard? Looking for a little extra side dish? Let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at The Feed Podcast.
Can't get enough of The Feed? Then take a listen to any of Podcast One's other fantastic food shows. Celebrity chef and top chef favorite Richard Blaze takes you behind the scenes of the food world every Tuesday with Starving for Attention. While every Wednesday, Michelle Davis and Matt Holloway of Forked Up, a Thug Kitchen podcast, serve up their own brand of food, politics, and pop culture. Check out Starving for Attention and Thug Kitchen every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're talking about breakfast today with our guest co-host, the Breakfast Queen, Ina Pinkney. That is actually your Instagram, right?
It is, at Breakfast Queen 1.
Breakfast Queen 1, okay. So as you eat around Chicago now, writing your column for the Tribune, have you noticed restaurants are getting away from the old school carb, protein, and fat-laden bacon, eggs, and toast combo?
Yes, they are. Here's what I've noticed. So there's a lot of immigrant kitchen dishes coming out. And one of the reasons is because people are traveling. I remember after there was some terrorist bombings in Istanbul, a lot of chefs and cooks were available, and they got a lot of visas. This is a few years ago, and they came over. And then all of a sudden, I saw on one menu a dish called Turkish egg. Silbir, C-I-L-B-I-R. And I asked the general manager, tell me about this. Well, we have a guy in the kitchen, and he made this for himself, and then we all kind of looked at it, and then he made it for family meal, and then we said, this is really too good not to put on a menu. So here it is, this dill and garlic-infused yogurt with a perfectly poached egg, and then they heat up some chili flakes in olive oil, and they just sprinkle it gently over the egg, and you eat that, and you go, this is so good. Mm. All the dishes, all the parts that we've used in other things, but here it is, a Turkish egg.
So when did you start? Because you've been at the beginning of this crest and this wave. You said you were doing breakfast in the 80s, and then the 90s really ramped things up in Lincoln Park. Did you see a time in the last 5-10 years when this wave started happening, when we got away from the, like I just mentioned, mm-hmm. the bacon, eggs, and toast?
It definitely happened within the last 4 to 5 years. Mm. We used to think that the most exotic thing you could do was hot sauce. You know, that was pretty exotic, that somebody would put a bottle of hot sauce on the table.
Chilaquiles.
Right. And that was hot. That was big. Or you took a jar of something and you put it on top of an omelet, you know, and that all of a sudden made it into something ethnic. So what I began to see was the difference between authentic and reminiscent. So are we talking about a Taco Bell, or are we talking about a taco truck? All of a sudden, things began to change, and people wanted what they're calling authentic now as opposed to reminiscent. And then you see a take on something. So here is Baker and Miller here in town. They're doing a shakshuka, but they're putting grains underneath the tomato sauce to give it some more heartiness and some other texture to it. So I would say about 4 years ago is when I started seeing all of this change coming in terms of what we were eating.
We also see, like, immigration. So, like, uh-huh. a place like Minnesota, which has a lot of Ethiopian and Somalis, when mm-hmm. they start getting into the business, or the Vietnamese in Houston and New Orleans, or, like, for example, here in Chicago, you and I went to a place called the Gundis, mm-hmm. which they're right. I mean, they're new immigrants, right?
They are.
They're from, like, is it Kurdish?
Kurdish,
or Turkish?
Yes. Kurdish. Yes, they're Kurds. And the food was delicious,
yeah.
and is delicious.
Yeah.
And everything they do, they use a spice. I forgot the name of that spice all of a sudden. But what we began to see was sour, a lot more preserved citrus, bold flavors, not just heat. And fusion, a lot more fusion, but the fusion that made sense. Take a look at the new Peruvian cuisines that are coming. There's some Asian in there as well. So all of a sudden, things began to make a little more sense that we were eating. They weren't just thrown together.
Do you think eggs are a prerequisite, though, if it's breakfast anything? Like, breakfast pizza typically means an egg is cracked on top of something. But does breakfast, quote-unquote breakfast, have to mean an egg?
It mostly will always mean an egg, because it is such a ready source of protein. But there's a new way of doing some oat meals here that I found that I thought was so interesting, that people are making oatmeal with a chicken stock and putting shredded chicken in it, because chicken has the same kind of halo of health around protein that eggs do. So you're going to find a lot more savory. People are doing the overnight oatmeals in the slow cookers. And then frittatas are not going anywhere, which I'm glad to see. There's also handheld that they're picking up at street carts in London. And there's been, I think it said there were 214,000 Instagrams with frittatas in the last year, and 47% uptake in blogging this past year. So they're not going anywhere, which I'm happy to. But I always want to go back to the 2 days when breakfast world changed completely. One was the Egg McMuffin. That changed breakfast completely. And then October 6, 2015 was the day McDonald's gave the world permission to have breakfast all day. Breakfast all day your way. And that was a really big deal. So when I talk about pre-breakfast, I want then to say that there's a blurring of the day part, meaning that breakfast for lunch seems a little indulgent, but breakfast for dinner is pure comfort food.
And that would be, again, any of these things you just described, a frittata, an omelet, anything, as long as it's...
Anything, right.
So the Egg McMuffin, that was just, that told us that breakfast could be portable, essentially, right?
That was it.
Consumed in the car.
That was it. Put those things together, a breakfast sandwich, hadn't been done before. Now it's everywhere.
And but again, that is such a, it's a carb, sort of fat, salt bomb in a way, isn't it?
And will always be. There's no way we're getting away from any of that. We're doing it in a different way. I mean, they're putting a hamburger on it over at Nighthawk AM, and it's a great breakfast sandwich, but it's still got your egg, and it's still got the meat and the cheese and the great bread.
And then the Aussies came up with avocado toast. I don't know what year, but that was definitely probably a Sydney or Melbourne thing. Although I think the Kiwis are going to argue about that, but I think Melbourne, Sydney kind of claims ownership of the avocado toast.
I believe that to be the case. But then there are people who take it another step further.
Right.
Like the Three Tarts Bakery up in Northfield. They just do on a sunflower bread that they make, and then they do, I can't even remember, but I remember radishes on it, and I remember all kinds of things on it, thinking, my God, they've taken avocado toast and they've made it better and better and better.
Yeah, Northfield, by the way, is about 10 miles north of Chicago, just straight north of us. Mm-hmm. Speaking of avocado toast, one of the places I'm going to be talking about in our next segment, I'm not going to say which one yet, they do an avocado toast with hot pickled carrots, garlic, creme fraiche, and house-made za'atar. That sounds interesting.
I would go there today.
It's on the West Coast. It's not very good. But, I mean, again, some of these West Coast breakfasts, I just love the grain bowls, the inspiration, and a lot of savory. I, you know, I've never been a fan of sweets at breakfast. I don't know if you are, but, like, I see mascarpone French toast, or I see, like, lots of chocolate over things. It's too sweet.
Too sweet for me.
But there are a lot of really intense savory things. Another dish that I'm going to talk about in the next segment from a place, it's actually in Australia. This is an interesting dish, a minced lamb fry with miso eggplant, fried eggs, barberry, smoked yogurt, pine nut dukkah, and sourdough. I mean, and I had this actually when I was there about a year ago. It's they take a very different approach, I think, in Australia to breakfast. There are no conventions. They just really get creative with it. And I think because there's Southeast Asian influence and Middle Eastern influence, and then just the bounty of what's around them, and, of course, all the water. So it's just, I wish more places around the country would sort of get into that creative inspiration a little bit.
So in the next segment, I'm going to talk to you about that.
Okay. We're going to talk about specific breakfasts?
No, about flavor density.
Flavor density. Wow. Oh. I like all these terms are coming up. Okay. All right. When we come back, where to go for breakfast? I mean, you can't just go anywhere for $14 eggs. Ina and I pick a few of our favorites. Then we're going to wrap things up and preview some scenes from next week's show. So stay with us.
You're listening to The Feed Podcast. Get the inside scoop by following us on Twitter at The Feed Podcast.
Have a beef with something you heard? Looking for a little extra side dish? Let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at The Feed Podcast.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're talking breakfast today with Ina Pinkney, the chef, baker, restaurateur turned breakfast columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Ina is sitting in for Rick this week and next as he is on the road. We've talked about the changing face of breakfast and how an operator might want to approach this dining category. Now we're going to recommend a few places to go for breakfast. And since you're our guest, I'm going to let you go first. But before I let you go first, I want to just one question just came to mind. As someone is considering going into this day part, it's a challenging one because, as you know, you don't really make money on food in the industry. You make money on booze. So do you find that there's a lot of turnover from these places because they don't anticipate that? They just think they're going to be able to sell the food at a premium price?
There's a couple of answers to that question. Number one, we used to make a living selling breakfast. And then pre-recession and post-recession, when eggs jumped from $39 a case to $92 a case and when butter went crazy, everything changed. And yes, you can't make money without selling alcohol. And I'm going to tell you how we were able to raise our check average. So every time I would watch a server walk over to a table, the server would say, coffee? And people would say, coffee. The minute they said coffee, they don't buy freshly squeezed orange juice and they don't buy cappuccino. And I thought, how am I going to change this? And so what we did is we hired a kid, the juice boy, and he walked around with freshly squeezed orange juice and grapefruit juice. And he would watch the server before the server got to the table. I should say he watched the host. Host seats the people. The people sit down. Everybody has a body language. When they pick up the menu, they drop their shoulders, and then you know they're really ready to get down to business. That's when the kid hits the table and says, would you care for some freshly squeezed orange juice? Now, in a nanosecond, if I just said that to you, you would think, how big is it? Is it cold? Is it really freshly squeezed? How can I not see this? I want to know what this is. But if I show you a tray and it has juice on it, you're going to say, oh, yeah. And you're going to take a juice and you're going to take a juice and you're going to take a juice. By the time the server walks over to the table, he booked three juices already. And four juices pay for the gallon.
Wow. That's
so
God, that's
you,
great.
You have to know how to raise your check average.
Yeah.
Plus, at that point, the server doesn't have to say coffee and hurry up and get coffee. He can say, oh, I see Ina is over at the espresso machine. Perhaps after you finish your juice, you would like to have a cappuccino. And they now know we have espresso drinks, and now they know they have another option besides coffee. But it takes that one juice boy to figure it all out. So that's how we did it, and we were able to make some money on that instead of alcohol.
The secret knowledge of the juice boy. That's great advice. Okay, talk about some of the places you like to eat breakfast.
Right now, I am obsessed with Mortar and Pestle here in Chicago because he is making a breakfast fried rice that I can still taste.
Mm. And he used to work at Nomi, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I love. The high-end chefs got tired of the hours and got tired of the rat race. And so they've opened up places where they bring their ideas and they understand ingredients better than other people. And they take what's new. They make it new and now, their traditional stuff. So I'm really in love with that dish.
Okay. I'm going to go to Minneapolis, where I'm originally from, a place called Hell's Kitchen. You'd expect to see walleye on the menu because we're in Minnesota. So they have a walleye hash and eggs. They do cornmeal pancakes, something called toasted sausage bread. But the one dish I remember having there was called Manomin Wild Rice Porridge. I think it refers to an Indian Native American tribe. Wild rice is all over Minnesota.
Right.
But they cook it with heavy cream,
right,
roasted hazelnuts, dried blueberries, sweetened cranberries, and maple syrup.
Wow.
It's this beautiful Midwestern porridge. So Hell's Kitchen is a really well-known place for breakfast right downtown Minneapolis.
Can I go back to that dish you talked about out on the West Coast with all of those components?
Yeah.
So most of the young chefs who are cooking now grew up on Cheetos and Doritos. They are used to flavor density that my generation is not. So when I go to a place and there are too many elements on the plate, and they are clashing in my mouth because there's no balance, I can't eat it. I get palate fatigue after three bites.
Mm-hmm.
I have that with the Publican's marinated chicken, which I wanted to love. And three bites in, I'm done.
Hmm.
And that's because there's too much going on.
Well, the place I was talking about was Squirrel, by the way, in LA and Silver Lake, which, by the way, you do not want to go to on a weekend.
No, I would never go out on a weekend.
The lines are insane. But Jessica Kozlov is the chef and owner there.
Right.
She worked in Atlanta, I think, maybe for Ann Quattrano.
Maybe.
I think. But her Squirrel is a must. if you like breakfast. I mean, I just everything, the ricotta toast she does on the brioche with the seasonal preserves.
Yeah, see, that I would go for.
She's got a sorrel pesto rice bowl. I mentioned the avocado toast with the hot pickled carrots. Even her cookies, you get a kick out of this. Her sweets, she has a salty rye chocolate chip, a cookie, a honeycomb cocoa nib cookie, a chocolate tahini cookie.
Huh. I mean,
just interesting little riffs on traditional things. So,
that's what I do. I do love that.
Yeah, so squirrel is quite good. Okay, so what else? You mentioned mortar and pestle. Anything else here locally?
Oh, Celador Provisions.
Oh, yes.
My God.
You know what? I was there yesterday.
Were you there yesterday? Did you bring me anything?
It was one of the places on the list I was going to talk about today. One of the most fantastic dishes I've had all year. It was a chicken, in quotes, congee. So it wasn't really a porridge-y congee, but it was sort of like loosely cooked with rice.
Right.
Really heady broth and lots of umami. There's pickled mushrooms, this sort of chili-rubbed chicken thigh, a perfectly soft, supple, molten egg.
See?
And some crunchy cabbage and some fried garlic. And just, it was the most perfect bowl of deliciousness, Celador Provisions. And of course they bake, the bread and the butter there is
nothing
right?
like their bread. And they only make enough to serve there. Sometimes I try to go at the end of the day, you got a piece left or something, but no.
Yeah, that's a must visit in Chicago, Celador Provisions. I'm going to go to Cafe Pasquale's in Santa Fe next. Have you heard of this place?
I actually have the poster in my kitchen.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Catherine Cagle. Yeah, I was there many, many years ago, but I still remember having this chorizo burrito. You get it red or green, or you get a Christmas burrito, which is the red
and green
salsa together, which is fantastic. She's got a griddled mascarpone polenta with sautéed chorizo, corn, and red chili. Obviously, lots of chiles and corn because you're in the Southwest. A huevos barbacoa, a smoked trout hash. Again, you look at a breakfast menu like this, and you're like, I want to try everything. And I don't want to eat there by myself because you can only get like one or two things without looking like a chaz. I mean, you really want to go with a couple of people so you can try different things, right? Okay, what else?
For me, Baker and Miller is pushing the boundaries. And I mentioned them because they're using some grains in the shakshuka. There's something about their sensibility. There's something about the way they put things together that makes sense to me and that is just delicious. So I will eat anything they put in front of me.
Yeah. They were originally part of the trio that had Bang Bang Pie Company, and then they split amicably, and then Michael took Bang Bang, and they went to do what they're doing.
And they just moved from Western over to Lincoln under the L, and the place is really exactly what they need with air conditioning, which helps in the summer.
So it's called Baker Miller.
Baker Miller. Yeah.
And again, by the way, we're going to have all the information, all these places we're mentioning today on our website, thefeedpodcast.com.
Right.
I'm going to talk about the place I alluded to in the last segment with the minced lamb fry, the miso eggplant, the fried eggs.
Yeah.
It's called Higher Ground. It's in Melbourne.
Ugh.
And Melbourne, just the breakfast that I had in Australia, I'll never forget them. And when I go back one day, because I've got two nieces and a sister-in-law there, the first thing I'm going to do is try to tackle more of these breakfast places because they think about breakfast in a completely different way. Here's another dish they had from that menu at Higher Ground. Lentil and buckwheat bolognese, grilled black cabbage, shaved fennel, sourdough crumb, poached egg, salted ricotta. They had a confit lamb sausage roll with a cucumber pickle, some garlic, and anchovy mayo. There's side dishes. So again, side dishes at breakfast, you'd think, oh, you have eggs and toast and bacon. They had charred greens with miso and toasted seaweed.
Wow.
And they had almond hummus with roasted chili. I mean, you just wouldn't see that on a typical breakfast menu in America. So
no.
I just, that higher ground, one of the all-time great breakfasts I've ever had.
And I brought you a menu here from also, I think it's in Melbourne, to a place called Turquoise. And we, you and I looked at this, and there's everything on here that you would want to eat any time of the day.
Yep.
And I think that's what makes it so great. One of the things I did at the CIA for the Flavor Summit last year is we decided to take Eggs Benedict, and we decided to try to make them a little more regional instead of just the classic. And so I used grits as a carrier. I used grits as a carrier instead of the English muffin. And then we did fried green tomato. I did grilled pork belly and then a poached egg and then some Cajun aioli on top.
That sounds great.
And so there's ways of taking what we know and making it a little more interesting.
Let's end this segment talking about New York. We got to talk about New York, of course. Now, you think about the bagel and the schmear as a classic. I would send people to Black Seed Bagels. There's a couple of them in the city. There's one on the Lower East Side. I really like what Noah's doing there. They boil and bake them in-house. You can get, of course, all the different varieties, but his smoked fish is wonderful, and the schmears are wonderful, and just a really great New York experience. I would also put Russ and Daughters in there.
I would, too.
Yeah. I mean, either the cafe or the deli.
Right.
I think you should see the deli, because it's down the street from Katz's, and you're on Houston, and it's just a great little slice of history.
But the cafe was a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
I mean, talk about a New York experience.
So why don't we have more of that in Chicago, I wonder?
I think it's too expensive. I've always thought, well, why don't we have smoked sable and smoked sturgeon here in our delis? And I think it's just expensive. People in Chicago aren't going
to
spend $30 for a quarter pound of fish or a half pound. It's just too expensive. And I think everybody here eats lox in the Midwest. I just haven't seen anybody able to be sustainable with sable or sturgeon, which is really kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Yeah, when I go to the East Coast, that's what I do. But I spend, you know, $40 on breakfast that way.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
It is worth it. Because you don't have, it's not every day, right?
Right.
What about a place called Sedell's was good. I had bagel and lox at Sedell's also, which is kind of a fancier place for a breakfast. But Norma's.
I knew you. Oh, yes.
This is the Parker Meridian. It's in Midtown. They've got a little burger joint, which is fun.
Right.
And then Norma's.
That funny little door you have to go through to get to the burger joint.
Yep.
But yeah,
Norma's is a really interesting place. I mean, it ain't cheap.
I remember.
Right? $30 for some of these breakfast items. But the menu's fun. There's a German pancake. There's okonomiyaki with shrimp and bacon. There's a lobster frittata. You can up it with Savruga caviar. They've got arepas, granola, breakfast burritos. One of the funny things I saw, if you like sweet breakfast, which I don't, but there's a thing called the Donut Even Go There French Toast.
Oh, that's a funny word.
Cheesecake stuffed, coconut rolled with orange drizzle and vanilla ice cream.
And you know why the menu is like that? Because of their guest mix. People from all over the world. And so they're going to want something that is reminiscent. And so that's why they have so many of those dishes that you and I wouldn't expect on a breakfast menu.
To see okonomiyaki, which is sort of an Osaka-based cabbage pancake.
Right.
You know, and that menu was very, very, very funny. Anything else I missed? Anything you want to cover?
Interurban Boathouse over on Cortland.
Yeah.
She's doing a really nice Japanese vegetable pancake.
So Christine, the owner, used to work at Trotter's in pastry, right?
Yes.
And then she opened across the alley from Trotter's and then moved over to this boathouse right on the river, on the Chicago River.
She's going to be doing the new stuff at JoJo's, which is on River North, and it's going to be kind of a diner, but specializing in sweets, diner food and sweets.
Okay, so but her place is called Interurban Boathouse.
And it's quite wonderful, and there's free parking.
Again with the free parking.
I can't help it.
No, that is very important. It's an important thing in Chicago. Everybody drives, yeah. All right, well, listen, Ina, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for guesting this week. You're going to come back next week, right?
I am indeed.
All right, I learned so much today just from chatting with
everybody.
This is so great. So, all right, listen, coming up next week, everybody, the latest efforts by nonprofits and other NGOs to reshape how kids are being taught about food in the classroom.
One of our most popular lessons is our Taco Al Pastor lesson, and it's all about tracing the ingredients of the Taco Al Pastor from the Middle East to Europe to South America, up through Mexico, up to Chicago, and really how those ingredients came together here in Chicago. We've made the Taco Al Pastor our own here, and that's how it is with people. People travel here to Chicago. We make things our own.
From using food as subject matter to planting seeds during the regular curriculum, how we're teaching the next generation to understand and appreciate the food we grow and eat. That's next week on the show.
You can always contact us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at The Feed Podcast. You can also check out our ingredient challenges, get recipes, and other information about previous shows by simply visiting our website, thefeedpodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts or the Podcast One app. Be sure to follow me at Breakfast Queen One.
And I'm at Steve Dolinsky. More information about the places we talked about today on the website as well. Alex Mascari is our intern. Max Dolinsky supervised today's music. Bureaucratic wrote and performed our theme song. And the Feed Podcast is edited by Matt Cunningham at Truthful Enthusiasm. Whether you're an individual or institution, get your story online with truthfulenthusiasm.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great breakfast.
Edible underpants, never classy. Edible arrangements, always classy. It's easy to make a big impression this Valentine's Day with the freshest fruit and the finest chocolate from Edible Arrangements. Don't wait until the last minute. Place your Valentine's Day order by February 10th and save 20% on all pickup orders over $50. Stop by your local Edible Arrangements and experience love at first bite, or order online and have delicious delivered at edible.com.
Questions for Whitaker. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. Before the House Judiciary Committee today has been Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker. He says he has made no promises to the White House about the Russia investigation.
At no time has the White House asked for, nor have I provided, any promises or commitments concerning the special counsel's investigation or any other investigation.
Whitaker's frustration with Democrats on the committee was evident as he repeatedly insisted he would not discuss his conversations with the president. The Trump administration's peace envoy for Afghanistan says although his talks with the Taliban have produced a tentative framework agreement, the negotiations have a long way to go to achieve peace. Deputy White House Press Secretary Hogan Gidley says border security talks are not progressing.
We're on the verge of a government shutdown again. Because Democrats won't come to the table and have a conversation about securing the country.
A deadline to reach a deal is a week from today. I'm Ed Donahue.